Well, we've been thinking about themes from the book of Proverbs, calling the series Wisdom for Living. And we all want to have that. We want to live wise lives, know what to do, know when to do it. We want our lives to honor God. And one of the challenging aspects of that is just the practical living day to day. How do you conduct yourself in this situation or in that situation? How do you weed out of your life the things that aren't helping? How do you put into your life the things that will help? And there's a lot of practical insight into that in the book of Proverbs. We've considered quite a few subjects already. Some of them have stung a little bit, and some of them have stung a lot. And some of you have been making comments every week, like, when is this going to end? So I guess it's just not easy to adjust ourselves, and it can be a painful process. Well, today's subject is one that we would tend to put in that kind of category. This might hurt a little. However, when we have... Too late. I got you now. I locked the door. You know, as with the other things that we've looked at, though, this subject... however much it challenges us, is also going to contain a lot of encouragement and a lot of positive stuff that we can apply to our lives. So that's where we're headed. If it stings a little getting there, sorry, you can understand that it hurt me worse this week. But our subject is the tongue. Yeah, see, you're already convicted, aren't you? That's all you got to say. You don't even have to read the scripture. We're convicted. We're going to think today about the things that you allow to come out of your mouth. The things that you plan to say, the things that you do say, the things that you didn't plan to say, but then you said them anyway. Kind of a scary subject. We've all said things that we regret. We've all spoken too soon. We've all said too much. We've all wanted to take something back only to discover that you really can't take it back. You used to say that as kids. I take it back. No, you can't do that. It doesn't really work that way. We've all been on the receiving end and on the giving end of words that were not rightly spoken. And the book of Proverbs has some things to say about that. One of the things that it often reminds us of is the power of the tongue for destruction. This is the part that stings a little. Proverbs 12:18 says, "There is one who speaks rashly like the thrusts of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing." Rash words are like the thrusts of a sword. They're designed to do harm, and they can do significant harm. Nobody thrusts at you with a sword unless they mean to do you some serious hurt. And there's just not any other purpose for wielding a sword. And even carelessly walking around with one out of the scabbard, you could hurt somebody pretty bad. And so this is a very compelling illustration of what our tongues are like. If we're jabbing at people with our words, it's to hurt them. If we're careless with our words, we will hurt them. Whether we meant to or not, it's just a vivid, already lost one. What do you do? It's just a vivid reminder of the destructive power of our words. Another proverb that deals with this is Proverbs 18:21. That verse says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit." Now that last part kind of goes with either option, death or life, whichever one you love, that's what you're going to get fruit from. But among the things that we would put in the category of the power of the tongue would be death itself. Now that's kind of drastic, but it is true. People have literally died as a result of words spoken in wrong circumstances. People have died over misunderstandings that came from a misuse of the tongue. And so, it could be a false witness. It could be a statement made in haste that led to something else that you weren't planning on. So both of those verses that we've read so far remind us of this incredible destructive power that lies in the human tongue. Like the thrusts of a sword doing serious damage or even causing death, the tongue is a powerful force. Now, having something that is a part of you that has this kind of power for harm gives us some pretty weighty responsibilities, doesn't it? I mean, since you really can't take it back, there's not any way to fully undo what you did. You can work on it, but you can't go back in time. It's vitally important that we learn to restrain our tongues, to guard our tongues, to be very careful about what we say. A very small thing spoken carelessly can do huge damage. Now, James mentions this. James chapter 3, verses 5 through 6 says, "So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. Behold, how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell." Now that's pretty pointed language, and it's a graphic illustration. How big a forest can you consume with a tiny fire? Strike a match and drop it. 1 million acres? 2 million acres? Just that one little flame that you could have gone and it would have been over with. But set something on fire and the fire grows. And that's how it is with our words. They can multiply after it's too late to take them back. And that means we need to be very intentional and very careful to guard what we say, to think first, to carefully consider if anything needs to be said at all, and if so, what, and to speak only what is helpful. Another proverb that addresses this is Proverbs 21:23. It says, "He who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from troubles." There's so much anguish that could be avoided if we could just catch that before it got out of our mouth. And refrain from saying things that are not helpful or that are even harmful or spiteful. Ephesians 4 gives us a good test to use. Somebody read Ephesians 4:29 for me. Whoever gets there first and isn't shy, speak up. Ephesians 4:29.
I got it.
All right.
4:29, right?
Yep. All right. Somebody got a different version? What was that one? New King James?
Yeah.
Somebody got another? Mitchell. Good and loud now.
"Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear."
All right. Thank you. Now, this is kind of a test for what comes out of your mouth. This is what you need to apply before anything comes out of your mouth, which is the hard part, I guess. But it's a pretty high standard, isn't it? There's some questions you can ask if you're going to use that verse as your watchword for your words. Is what I'm about to say wholesome? Is it good for edification? Is it going to build anybody up? Is there any point to what I'm about to say that is going to help at all? Does it fit the need of the moment? According to the need, this verse says. It can be true and apply to nothing that's happening today. Can't it? Didn't pass the test. Will it give grace to those who hear? Is there any good that's going to be accomplished by saying it? A lot of things that are true that just aren't going to help right now, and we need to rein them in and not say them if that's the case. But the powerful force for destruction that is among your members, as James put it, has to be restrained. There is a need to decide what not to say. Guarding your tongue, letting no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth. Now that's part of the secret for wise living where your tongue is concerned. Restraining yourself from speaking anything that comes to mind, checking to see if it's going to help, if there's a point, if it's good for edification, if it's wholesome, and if it's not, just don't say it. That's a big part of wise living, particularly where your tongue is concerned. That's really the first step. Don't let the bad stuff happen. First, do no harm, as Socrates said. It wasn't him, was it? Who said that? Hippocrates. Thank you. Just one beat behind, see? There it was. There's another aspect of controlling your tongue, though, that I want you to think about. You do want to avoid destruction by careless words that are intended to do harm, or by careless words and words that are intended to do harm. But your responsibility for wise living regarding your tongue does not end with restraint. In other words, you can't just be quiet and therefore be holy. You can't just hush and meet all your obligations for wise living. Keeping your mouth shut helps a great deal at times, but it's not your only job. The Proverbs also speak a lot about the power of your tongue for good. Now, most of us have thought a lot about how we shouldn't have said something and how it would have been better at some point in life to have just kept your mouth shut and too late now. You might not think as much about the power that you have to accomplish good things by what you say, but the Proverbs say a lot about it. And even some of the ones that we've looked at already, there is the mention of this other kind of power that is in your tongue. It's not just a force for destruction, but it can be a force for healing and life. Now, one of the ones we just looked at, Proverbs 12:18, there is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. The one whose words are like the thrust of the sword is not the only guy talking. There's another guy who's wise, and he uses his tongue to help people. Instead of injuring them, he's healing them. It's possible to do tremendous good with the words that you say, the way that you say things. And people who do this are called wise by the Scripture. They know how to use their tongues for good. They find ways to encourage other people and help other people and glorify God with their mouths. Now, this is a possibility that we need to consider. After we're through beating ourselves up for what we shouldn't have said and the fact that we keep making the same mistake again and again with what we should not have said, there's still this other side to be thought of. If restraint were our only responsibility, then the people who don't talk much would be the most holy people. And they'd be called wise. People who never say anything would be called wise by the Bible, but it isn't like that. We're not called to a vow of silence and keeping quiet all the time so that nothing bad can come out of your mouth is not what the Bible calls wise. Instead, the wise use their tongues to bring healing. Proverbs 18:21, which we looked at just a second ago, says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit." Death is in the power of the tongue, but so is life. Misuse of the tongue can literally cause someone's death, but wise use of the tongue can preserve life. And you're going to enjoy the fruit of whichever one of those you're dabbling in. But again, the wise don't just try to avoid talking. They avoid saying bad things and they endeavor to say helpful things. Proverbs 15:23 says, "A man has joy in an apt answer, and how delightful is a timely word." You don't get that just being quiet. Oh, quiet is good, and there are times that's all we want, you know, just I could have just been quiet. But there is joy in an apt answer, and a timely word is delightful. So wisdom avoids the wrong things and says the right things. Speaks apt words. Now turn to Proverbs 25 and verse 11. Proverbs 25, 11. And I'll read through verse 15. Like apples of gold in settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances. Like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold is a wise reprover to the listening ear. Like the cold of snow in the time of harvest is a faithful messenger to those who send him. He refreshes the soul of his masters. Like clouds and wind without rain is a man who boasts of his gifts falsely. By forbearance, a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue breaks the bone. Now, there's a lot in those few verses about what can be accomplished through wise words. There's the contrast with the guy who's boasting all the time and never doing anything. But the rest of it is about all the good stuff that can be accomplished by the wise with their words. Words spoken in right circumstances have a definite beauty about them. Here they're compared to a magnificent piece of art. Apples of gold and settings of silver. Something beautiful. Something you would want to have in your house. Something perfectly situated, of great value and attractive. That's how wise words are. Words that are spoken the right time in the right way. In fact, in this passage, even reproof is beautiful in that way. Verse 12 says, like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold is a wise reprover to the listening ear. Now there's more than one way to reprove. And so it says a wise reprover, someone who's thought about how to, not just what's the problem, but how do I get across to the person who's about to have to be reproved that it's really going to be better if you listen to this. I want to help you. And you're going to be happier if you get this. And there's a way to present information where it's a little easier to take. And that kind of reproof is a beautiful thing to the guy who listens to it. It's like, wow, he cared enough to tell me that. And it helped me. This is awesome. So even in that setting of that we would consider emotionally unpleasant, somebody's having to rebuke somebody else, wise words have real value and real beauty. Wise words can refresh the listener. They can give hope and confidence. They can restore perspective. This comparison to snow, cold snow in the time of harvest, that may sound like something you don't want, but that first snow, you walk out, isn't that cool? Even if you live up in the north where you're really tired of snow by Thanksgiving, the first one is great. Everybody says nothing like the first one. This is what he's talking about, just refreshing. It'd been hot for so long, and now there's this cool, crisp, refreshing morning. And that's how a wise person's words are. Words can refresh, they give hope, they restore perspective. Wise words have incredible power to influence people for good. You can accomplish things with your words that you can't get done any other way. I don't know if you've thought about this. There are a lot of things in life that you don't have the power to do, and making someone else do something is right at the top of the list, isn't it? There aren't that many people you can force to do anything. But wise words can strongly influence people that you would otherwise have no power over. You're never going to force it. You're never going to pressure them into doing it. You're never going to cajole them into doing it. But carefully chosen words from a wise heart can get things done that can't be done any other way. Look at verse 15. By forbearance, a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue breaks the bone. You can get things across and get the guy who has the power on your side by being careful, forbearing, soft with your words. A soft tongue breaks the bone. You can defeat your enemy with gentle words that are well chosen. Truth doesn't have to be shouted. Typically, the volume goes up as the content goes down. Soft tongue breaks the bone. Well, we need to guard our tongues. We need to keep ourselves from causing division, from causing confusion, from bringing about destruction with what we say. We need to be very careful to refrain from words that are like the thrusts of a sword. But that's not the end of our responsibility. We have to use our words to do good, to bring healing and life, to restore hope and confidence, to persuade people to godliness, to refresh them and encourage them in godliness, to demonstrate faithfulness. Have you considered the power that you have, without being a ruler, without being the master that's referred to in this passage, the power that you have, if you speak with wisdom? Well, your tongue is working all the time. It's doing something every day. You got to avoid destruction. You got to use it to do good. And the third thing I want you to think about this morning is that pretty much everything you say is going to be in one category or the other. All the time we're talking, we're leaning one way or the other. Destruction, healing. And most of these verses that we've read this morning give those two kinds of possibilities, and they don't give a lot of middle ground. The language is very graphic, like the thrust of a sword or healing. Death and life. Now, I'm not saying that every word that comes out of your mouth is literally going to produce death or life. I think you could probably order your lunch today in an even voice, just a neutral tone, without causing anyone's death, and maybe without preserving their life. But I am saying that everything you do, everything you say, is leaning one way or the other. We're given the extremes because there really isn't a middle that you can just stay in. You're going one way or the other. You're going to speak things that are generally either rash or wise. Generally, they're either like the thrust of a sword, just jabbing at people all the time with your words, or they're encouraging, you're bringing healing. And that can be true of how you order your lunch. Several months ago, I was in the Burger King just down the street here trying to get some lunch. And the line was long and slow, and this poor girl at the cash register had not been trained. She was from somewhere in Latin America. She was working in a language that was not her own. She was having trouble with the Canton accents, which is understandable. She didn't understand the cash register. She didn't understand the food that they sold. She had not been trained to do the job. I didn't really take any of that to be her fault. I figure the manager back there that's twiddling his thumbs was at fault for putting her out there. But the guy in front of me didn't see it that way. And he just kept jabbing at her, calling her stupid, calling her other things that weren't as nice as that, because she had gotten his order wrong twice. And we're all waiting, thinking, oh, it's been a long time. And this guy just gets more and more belligerent until this poor girl starts crying. And he kept poking at her after she started crying. And I'm starting thinking, I don't want to go to jail for assault. Just stay calm. And then the guy bellows out that he just wants his money back, and he gets it from the manager, and he storms out the door, and she's crying, and the manager's going back to twiddling his thumbs, and I'm next. And I'm thinking, what do I say now? I was so busy trying not to hit the guy, and I'm next. Well, I tried to encourage her. I used to work at a Burger King when I was in high school. I knew how she felt. And I said, you know, don't let that guy ruin your day. He's just wrong. Just don't let him ruin your day. You're doing all right. It's going to get easier. And she still crying, but maybe not quite as much. Takes a little time to get over those thrusts of a sword. And I thought, you know, I don't know that I would have been that nice to her if he hadn't been such a jerk. I hope I would have been, but I don't know that I would have been. It was because he was such a complete jerk with her that I was very careful to try and encourage her. His rash behavior reminded me that that person needed a little encouragement and that my words were either going to be like his or they were going to be drastically different from his. And so I kind of set aside my schedule and tried to tell her it was going to be all right. I still kind of thought the manager needed an explaining or two, but couldn't get to him, so. Your words are going one way or the other. You're going to have them crying, or you're going to make their day better. Or pointing toward crying, or better. We're responsible for how we speak. And the wise use their tongues to do good. One other passage, Proverbs 15, 1 through 4. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of the fool spouts folly. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, watching the evil and the good. A soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit. Now those are the options, and God is watching. Tree of life, crushed spirit. And the eyes of the Lord are in every place. This is a significant responsibility. You know, the words that you use are either going to cause wrath or turn it away, make knowledge acceptable or spout folly. We're accountable to God. We're accountable to other people for how we do this. Proverbs 12, 25. Anxiety in a man's heart weighs it down, but a good word makes it glad. The righteous is a guide to his neighbor, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. So here's a guy who is having a bad day. Maybe he's having a bad life. He's depressed. He's discouraged. Anxiety in his heart has him weighed down. And a good word's going to make him glad, or you can make it worse, depending on what you say. But the righteous is a guide to his neighbor. The wicked leads him astray, takes him on down that road he's going on, makes it worse. So our responsibility is before God. He's watching, and it is to our neighbors who need us to lead them into better things rather than lead them further astray. Now, when is it time for you to take action to avoid saying the wrong things? When do you do that? Right after you speak, right? While you're speaking?
You have to be in a mindset before, you know, every minute.
Yeah.
You go out.
Yeah, I mean, you do. You have to take action before you speak. That's why y'all are grinning at me. You knew the answer. You didn't want to be the one to say it. If you wait till after you've spoken, how much more complicated is it if you didn't speak the right thing? A lot? Can you fix it? I'm getting a no back there. Any other votes? No, you can't. Can't take it back. Now, I don't want to leave you totally demoralized. You can apologize. You can ask for forgiveness. You can explain, I'm sorry, I was having a bad day. I'm wrong. Please forgive me. You can do damage control. You remember that thing I told you last week? Erase it from your memory. It was, I shouldn't have said that. And God is gracious. If He weren't, we'd all have killed each other already. But it's much better if we don't have anything that we wish we took back. So, practically speaking, how do you avoid saying the wrong things and manage to say the right things? How do you do that?
Thinking first.
Yeah, think before you speak.
Living by the Spirit.
Yeah, living by the Spirit.
Let the Word of Christ dwell within you richly.
Let the Word of Christ dwell within you richly. That's good. You got to fill up your mind with content, don't you? It's good. So when these really, really unnice words come out of your mouth, where do they originate?
In the heart.
Yeah. They come out of the heart, don't they? So, you go ahead.
Proverbs 4:23 says, "Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life."
Yeah, that's good. That's right. Luke 6:45 says, "The good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth what is good. The evil man, out of the evil treasure, brings forth what is evil. For his mouth speaks from that which fills his heart." So, if you want to address this issue effectively, you do have to do something before you speak. You've got to think. You've got to guard your mouth. But you have to address the source of the wrong words, which is a sinful heart. And I think this is what Dave was saying, is you got to live in the Spirit. That's what Mark was saying. You got to have the mind of Christ. You need the content of Scripture. Those are practical things that we can all do. Know the Scripture. Learn how to apply it to situations in life. People don't need cheerleaders to get them through. They need content. You find somebody that's really hurting, and you say to them, "Oh, it's going to be all right. Now, don't worry. Be happy." You've made it worse. It's not going to be all right. Not in this life. Not for everybody. There are times when that's just not true. It's going to be hard from now until eternity. When eternity starts, then it's going to be fine. But there are people who are suffering things in this life that are not going to get better. And don't worry, be happy is not the answer. We need truth. And there is truth in Scripture that applies, even if something's not going to get better in this life. If someone is diagnosed with a terminal illness, that's going to mean a lot of suffering from now until death. Saying, "Don't worry, be happy," doesn't help. But there are things that you can say that will help. Your life is in God's hands. He knows where you are. He can sustain you through this. He will give you the grace to get through this. And we're going to help you. Now those things, that's content. That's true. Those things will bring healing to that soul, real encouragement. So if you're going to give that kind of stuff, you've got to get the right perspective on life from the Scripture. You can study it and apply it to your own life. You can bounce things back and forth with other believers. Now, can you think of any area in our culture that makes this subject matter even more challenging for us maybe than other generations? It is harder now. You know that, right? just send me an email. Well, I'll IM you with my answer to that. So now your words are being forwarded to other people that you didn't even say them to. It's a challenging thing. What you put in writing, so much easier now to disperse your words to the whole world through email. It's the same general idea. It didn't come out of your mouth, but it came out of your heart. So I would challenge you, think before you email too. It's not a conversation, to quote Tim Ake. It's not a conversation. There is no inflection. It's so easy to misunderstand. The little smiley thing doesn't help that much. And Tim and I were talking one time about some emails that had gone back and forth that probably should not have, and content that didn't need to be published in that way. And Tim said, you know, if there were a tape recorder on this table, the conversation would be a little bit different. And I thought, that's a great point. If we're talking and it's being recorded for all the world to hear at some point, then we're going to be a little more careful what we say. And that's the approach we need to take with our tongues and with our emails and with our instant messaging and whatever other way you proclaim whatever is lurking in your heart, for good or bad. Well, what else? Any other comments or questions this morning? In prayer, and we'll stop.